In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yes.
Let us talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joins us on this Monday afternoon. Hello there, Al.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all righty, thanks. Doing great. That weather and 60 for Friday. I'm ecstatic. Let's cut to the chase. Shorts, status, Alan Adams. When?
Yes, 100% shorts. I probably won't even wait till Friday. I was checking out some Thursday. It's like lower 50s. I'm like, that might be it. That might be the day.
See, you can talk vernal equinox all you want. For me, real spring is when you pull out the shorts for the first time.
Well, get ready, man, because it's happening.
I love it. I love it indeed. How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. It was busy. A lot of work stuff, and I was working on a project. I'm taking part in the Port Fringe Festival's annual pop-up situation.
Excellent.
This year they're going full. They're doing full film. So this weekend I wrote and Sheridan filmed a little piece based on Circle Five in Dante's Inferno. It's Wrath, by the way. So we did a little something in the house and sent that. The video was due Sunday at midnight. So we spent some time this weekend working on that. And yeah, other than that, just sort of, I don't know, just breathing that sort of the sort of sigh of relief that came just enjoying that when my mom actually received her second vaccination shot on Thursday.
I saw that. That's great news.
You know, and so it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, finally, I could be in the same, you know, general vicinity of as her and not have that sort of that tight ball in my stomach.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like just that sort of stress that comes from not really knowing. And, you know, Sheridan and I have been tried to be pretty responsible through all of this, but you just never know. Like, that's the thing. You just don't know. And so it was just, it's just nice to know that, in another 10 days or so, at least I don't have to worry. I don't have to worry as much about her. Right. And with Sheridan's parents already having been fully vaccinated, like 2 weeks and all, like we can sort of rest a little easier. And I look forward to many more of my friends and loved ones getting to feel that same relief as we go forward.
Yeah, we just got to pick up the pace here so youngsters like you can get vaccinated.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Sheridan and I both, we've made our peace, and we were pretty much anticipating being pretty close to the end of the line anyway. And so, if I got to wait till May, I got to wait till May. Like, I'm not going to sweat it.
All right. Well, let's talk movies. You saw three over the weekend. What would you like to begin with?
Let's start with Boss Level. It's a new movie streaming on Hulu. It's directed by Joe Carnahan and it stars Frank Grillo. And, well, you know, Rich, it had been, you know, it had clearly been far too long since we were gifted with a time loop movie.
Wow, yeah, so, it's been days.
So here we are. This one is, and again, like, don't get me wrong, like I'm as big a fan of the sort of Groundhog Day only X sort of subgenre of movies, but it kind of feels like maybe we could pump the brakes a little bit. Well, frankly, it feels like you're kind of caught in a little bit of a time loop because you just kind of see the same movie over and over again. This one's action driven. Unfortunately, it doesn't really break a lot of new ground, so it's got a pretty low ceiling. But that being said, there's some pretty joyfully nonsensical action sequences. There's some pretty good stuff there. And Frank Grillo clearly does not give a crap. And so when you have that kind of performance in this kind of movie, it actually kind of works. It has a little bit of fun with the premise. Got some sharp action, some decent gags, and people are having a pretty good time. you know, the casting of the villain is problematic because we have Frank Grillo starring, Naomi Watts is in the movie, and the big bad, well, it's Mel Gibson, Rich.
No, oh.
We all know that that Mr. Gibson is well, he's a tough hang.
Yes,
knowing what you know about him, and so, but you know, he's the bad guy, so that sort of evens itself out. The basic gist is Frank Grillo plays a guy named Roy Pulver. He's like a former special forces guy, right from the get go, he wakes up and there's a crazy man with a machete trying to kill him. But we quickly see, as he very casually just sort of wanders through the encounter, clearly knowing exactly what machete guy is going to do at any given moment, we realize, oh, so we're sort of in media res, like we're already in the time loop. And that's kind of the deal. He's been reliving the same day over and over again, doesn't know why. No matter what he does or how he does it, he can't seem to really survive much beyond noontime. He's been being targeted by this really strange group of sort of oddball assassins, it's just a question of which one gets to him first. You got, you know, these couple of British women in a minivan, and then you've got an explosive expert who's also a little person, and then there's this weird hillbilly guy who's got a harpoon gun. Like, it just you just never know what's going to happen to him, but they're all trying to kill him. So dozens of attempts at a survival, dozens of eventual failures. We meet him when he's sort of carved out this routine where there's this one bar that he can go to, and he has time to get just rip-roaring drunk before they find him. And so that's basically what he's been doing, is just, escaping his one encounter, going to the bar, getting just ripped, and then just waiting for whoever shows up to off him. But as we learn, there's more to it than that. I'm not going to go into the plot specifics because it's a bunch of, like, you know, technobabble and MacGuffins. just know that Naomi Watts, his ex, obviously, is also some sort of scientist that's never really explained, who's working on some sort of big machine that's also never really explained, at the behest of a shadowy and sinister colonel, played by Mel Gibson, also never really explained. But this secret project is probably the reason why stuff's happening to our hero, and as it turns out, it might not just be affecting him, but it might have an impact on the universe as we know it. So, he's got to figure some stuff out.
Woo!
Like, it's fine. Like, I actually had a pretty good time. Like, it's not a movie that's going to get a lot of points for originality. Like, there's nothing in this movie that you haven't seen in another time loop movie. Like, it's that kind of thing. But regardless of how you feel about formula, I do think you need to sort of recognize the value of quality of execution. And the truth is, this is a pretty well executed version of what it is. Be that as a, for whatever that's worth, a couple of weird, misplaced nods to like video game imagery that never really go anywhere. Grillo's perfect for this kind of movie because like he's got some talent, but he also has this sort of B movie sensibility as well as a willingness to do literally any project. And so when you have someone like that, who has that sort of affinity for genre fare, like it really fits here. Naomi Watts is overqualified. She doesn't really get a whole lot to do. Mel Gibson, it's not even that his performance is bad. It's not. I mean, he can be a perfectly serviceable villain type figure for this kind of movie. It's just, he chews on the scenery and does some standard evil antagonist stuff. But it's not much anything more than that. It's just kind of meh. And the reality is, like, for all the baggage that comes with Mel Gibson in your movie, like, is meh really worth it?
Right.
My take would be no. Again, movie has some fun, never really pushes the envelope. Some good pieces, but it never quite reaches the value of some of its parts. Basically, if they'd run it through the time loop a couple more times, they actually probably would have had a pretty good movie.
All right, there you go. Up next, do we talk Moxie or Eddie Murphy getting the gang back together?
Let's talk about Moxie, because this is a movie I wasn't super familiar with this one. It's currently streaming on Netflix. It's directed by Amy Poehler.
Wow.
This is her second directorial feature. Her first was couple years ago. She did a movie called Wine Country, which was also for Netflix. The movie is adapted from Jennifer Matthews' 2015 novel of the same name. And it's the story of a teenage girl who inspired to take action against her high school's toxic culture by the sort of the music and the writings and the sort of activist attitudes of her mother's own high school experience. And it's nice. Like, it's, you know, it's a little shaggy, gets lumpy, maybe a little reductive in places, but I mean, far more pros than cons. Like, it's a good face effort to show young women trying to affect change in the world. And yes, like, as is a danger with all movies like this, it occasionally gets a little glib or maybe a little too try hard. The third act sort of button is a little much, you know, the filmmakers clearly sought to celebrate the effort of, you know, of trying to change the world around you. So we've got a 16-year-old girl. Her name is Vivian, played by Hadley Robinson. She lives in the Pacific Northwest with her mom, Lisa, also played by Poehler. She's shy, spends most of her time hanging out with her best friend, Claudia, played wonderfully by Lauren Tsai, and basically trying to figure out, like, you know, the sorts of problems that that teenage girls almost always have at the beginning of these movies. Basically, she's trying to figure out what she's going to write for her admissions essay to Berkeley. You know, in her English class, you know, she sits next to this guy, Seth, played by Nico Haraga, an old friend who, you know, grew 6 inches over the summer and it now is maybe possibly more than a friend material, who knows? But we're in a class discussion initiated by her teacher, Mr. Davies. Ike Barinholtz plays this part. Nice to see him. And the new girl, this girl named Lucy, played by Alicia Pascual Pena, tries to engage in the conversation and is immediately talked over and shut down and generally mansplained by this guy Mitchell, played by Patrick Schwarzenegger. Yeah, and he's, you know, Fat Schwarzenegger.
Oh, wow.
Who is the smug and entitled captain of the football team. And from there, we sort of get a sense of just how permissive an environment has been created for particularly the football players. No consequences for their actions, even when those actions are reported to the principal. The principal played wonderfully officiously by Marcia Gay Harden. You know, and so Vivian is frustrated and angry about all of this, not sure what to do. But then she stumbles on some of her mom's old stuff. She spends the evening like flipping through a bunch of old zines and listening to Bikini Kill. And then she's like, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start a zine. And so she starts writing this zine called Moxie, prints and distributes it in the girls' bathrooms at school, and remains anonymous with regard to her involvement. And a movement starts to grow, with many of the school's young women drawn to the message, while many of the more toxic residents of the school less thrilled at being called out for their behaviors. And so we sort of follow down that path as things gradually come to a head. The thing I really liked about this movie was there's a very genuine earnestness about it. Like, it could have been cloying, like when you're that sort of forthright, but Amy Poehler, turns out she knows a little bit about comedy. I don't know if you knew this. and so she's able to sort of, you know, engage that sincerity in a way that doesn't ever come off as too much. And that makes it feel very genuine. It seems like a really honest effort to look at the world in which high school girls are expected to navigate, like, today. And granted, it's a heightened version of that world. But, I mean, it's an honest one. You know, and it's the story of a person trying to make a difference. And not only that, but what happens when trying to make a difference doesn't work, or at least not in the way that you intended. Like, what do? Do you give up, or do you redouble your efforts? And that's a really important message to be sending. You know, and it's a wonderful choice by Poehler, I think. She's really challenging herself, I think, as she sort of moves onto that side of the camera. The cast is great. Like, the kids are all wonderful. They all do a great job as far as, like, you know, capturing the specific energies that they need. And look, man, like, Patrick Schwarzenegger, like, I don't know if the kid can act. I haven't seen him in enough to know it. In this, he's fantastic because, like, he's he's basically a 21st century John Hughes villain. Like it's like James Spader on steroids. I viscerally dislike him, and that's not easy to do, to inspire that sort of reaction. So we'll see what happens with him going forward. You know, the adults are fine as well. Like, Amy Poehler is fine. Marcia Gay Harden is good. Baron Holtz does his usual shtick. They're fine, but it's really about the kids. And while the movie might ring a little false in a couple spots and kind of fall flat in a couple of others, like, it more than makes up for its flaws with strong performances and an unwavering enthusiasm. So, all told, pretty good movie.
All right, and finally, let's check in 30-plus years later on Prince Hakim and Company.
It's weird that this movie exists, right? Like, you never know what goes into the decision-making when it comes to stuff like this. You know, and I mean, sequels in general are always sort of hit or miss. Like, even when you're talking about franchises, where the sequels are already baked into the equation, like, you can struggle to make a sequel work. But then when you're talking about sequels to films that clearly were not intended to have sequels, like how do you go back and continue a story that already kind of had a satisfactory conclusion? Well, apparently I'm not the only one who has those questions. Eddie Murphy has those questions and decided, you know what, I'm going to answer them. And that's what we get coming to number two, America, which, again, that's a hilarious title for this movie. It's the sort of title for this movie that I would have said as a joke. Like, it's like, oh yeah, it's the sequel to Coming to America. But here we are. It's the direct sequel to the 1988 Coming to America, which, you know, your mileage may vary. To my mind, an absolute all-timer of film comedy, like just an absolutely fantastic film. This new one is directed by Craig Brewer and is a 33 years later look at all of those characters. Like, just about everybody's back. And there are a couple of pretty high-profile additions. Look, this is it's an exercise in nostalgia. Like, that's what it is. And it's not as successful as it hoped to be. Personally, I enjoyed myself very much, but I will happily concede that my own personal affection for the original probably impacted my experience. And it's got plenty of issues. The narrative kind of loses coherence in spots, gets clunky in others, and the general rule seems to be everyone's more or less content to be like, hey, remember this, and show it to you, and that's pretty much what you get. But like I said, I still had a very good time. The story, such as it is, we're in Zamunda. Prince Hakim, Eddie Murphy, is preparing to assume the throne from his ailing father, King Jaffe, played by James Earl Jones. By his side is his queen, Lisa, Sherry Headley, the queen that he found in Queens decades ago. They have three daughters, Tinashe, Oma, and Mika, who've been raised in the Zamundan tradition. Mika has trained, she's the eldest, so she's trained to assume power, although Zamundan tradition prohibits a woman from inheriting the throne. We're in a time of unrest. Tensions between Zamunda and their neighboring nation, Nexdoria. Yes, it's called Nexdoria, which, again, I mean, magnificent. But there's a solution, potentially. Nexdoria's military leader, General Easy, played by Wesley Snipes, who is clearly having a great time, offers that his son might wed Mika in order to unite the two nations. It's viewed as the only possible solution, since Hakim has no male heir. Or does he?
Oh.
Yeah, so we get a prophecy from the local shaman, medicine man? I don't know. It's Arsenio Hall in a bunch of really weird makeup. This prophecy leads to a confession from Akeem's longtime companion, Semi, also played by Arsenio Hall, which in turn leads to a discovery that, due to an unremembered dalliance during their adventure in Queens so many years ago, Hakim may have a male heir after all. So they go back to Queens to track down the heir, who turns out to be a hustler, a struggling young man named Lavelle, played by Jermaine Fowler. you know, and we go, when we go back to Queens, we meet a lot of, like, we go back to the barbershop and see those and visit those guys again and all that stuff. So Akeem wants to bring Lavelle back to Zamunda, but Lavelle won't go alone. So before you know it, his mom, Mary, played by Leslie Jones, and his uncle, Reem, played by Tracy Morgan, are also along for the ride. But wouldn't you know it, much like Akeem himself sought to find true love and true connection, that's what Lavelle wants, too, even as he and his family sort of struggle to adjust to the culture shock of moving to Zamunda. He finds a confidant in his personal groomer, starts to question everything, but then those questions potentially put the well-being of Zamunda in danger. Now, look, again, just to be clear, I had a fabulous time watching this movie. I loved the original, and I was delighted to get a chance to spend time with these people. Like, it's like a chance to catch up with old friends, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I also have no illusions about the overall effectiveness of this film. Like, on its own merits, it's like a middle of the road. Like, there's some funny bits, but they're kind of sporadic, particularly if you aren't super familiar with the original. Like, so many of these jokes basically boil down to reminding you about jokes that were in the first movie. And I will also concede that once that sort of initial blast of, like, nostalgic delight subsides, a lot of the returning characters don't really have much purpose. But again, like, as far as I'm concerned, the memory's the point. Like Arsenio Hall came back as the unsettling and vaguely gross reverend, and Eddie Murphy plays Randy Watson, and Sexual Chocolate is back. And, you know, and we get the barbershop crew with Arsenio Hall playing Morris and Eddie Murphy as both Clarence the Barber and Saul. And, like, that's what I wanted. Like, that's
right.
You know, what they said and what they did once they got there didn't really matter as much. And again, it's uneven. There's a lot going on. Things get a little messy. It's just a little bit overstuffed. Like, there are a bunch of, like, weird entrance and exit, like, dance and music sequences. And again, like, the runtime is probably a little overinflated just by the sheer bloat that comes with fan servicing everything. Like, when I say that everybody's back, like, I mean it. And even those brief scenes and cameos add up. So it's the sort of movie where it seems like everybody had a really good time. Like, and, you know, Eddie Murphy's not great at masking when he's checked out. So it was nice to see the sort of twinkle in his eye when he was in this movie. Like, he was having a good time. Arsenio Hall, not a strong actor. Like, this Coming to America was far and away the best thing he ever did. And this sequel is second because he's also enjoying himself. And the relationship between he and Eddie Murphy is still solid. You know, the shtick gets a little tired at times, but still, it's kind of fun to watch them put on their wigs and their prosthetics and their fat suits and just get, you know, weird. We have lots of the supporting cast. You know, a lot of the returning actors are just there to carry forward the bit. Like, Louis Anderson is, like, barely in it, but he's here. John Amos shows up in a couple of scenes, which is great. But, you know, Sherry Headley gets a chance to get after it a little bit, which is nice. She was kind of, you know, she didn't really get any much room to shine in the original. And as for the newcomers, the kid playing Lavelle is pretty good. Leslie Jones and Tracy Morgan both go for it in the ways in which only they can go for it, which is really fun. And, you know, Wesley Snipes is a hoot. And, there are a lot of cameos, like a lot of cameos that I'm not going to go through because everyone's a delightful little surprise that I certainly enjoyed, and I imagine a lot of people will as well. Basically, it boils down to this. Not a great movie, but I had a great time. So if you're looking for some nostalgic chuckles, you will also have a great time.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
We can all use that. Carrie, you watched it. You enjoyed it a lot.
I did. There is fan service in the movie, and they are unapologetic about it. That makes it a lot more acceptable as a viewer, I thought.
Yeah. I'm there with you, Carrie, for sure.
You know, if they tried to play it off like they weren't doing it, it would have made it not as much fun. So, you know, there was a wink and a nod behind it. And I thought there was, yeah, you know, the story is uneven, but there is enough of a story there to hang everything on.
Yep, I agree.
There you go. Alan Adams talking movies right here on Downtown and Pass the Popcorn. Alan, thank you as always. And let's say we get together again Wednesday.
Yeah, works for me.
I'll do it. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks.
Alan Adams talking movies on Downtown.